What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Brother Jack McDuff is one of the most celebrated jazz organists in music history. Over the years, McDuff has become an international icon of jazz music. But few music fans know about McDuff's roots on the Avenue. Before he gained fame as a jazz organist, McDuff was playing bass and piano on the Avenue. On this week's show, we'll look back on McDuff's connection to the Avenue, and we'll listen to his recordings with important Naptown musicians. Brother Jack McDuff was born Eugene McDuffie in Champaign, Illinois in 1926, and he was performing under the name McDuffie when he made his first appearances on the Avenue. A 1949 ad in the Indianapolis Recorder promoted the Jack McDuffie Trio's performance at the Ritz Show Lounge. Jack McDuff lived and worked in Naptown during this time. He played bass with the Avenue pianist Millard Lee and played piano for the Jimmy Cole Band. McDuff also worked as a band leader at Avenue venues like the P&P Club. There's only one known recording of McDuff from this period, a 1951 single from the sax player Schoolboy Porter. The record features McDuff on piano. Let's hear an excerpt. McDuff's fortunes changed dramatically when he began performing on the organ in the late 1950s. He was living in Chicago at the time and was invited to join the band of Willis Gator Jackson, a star sax player during the 1950s. McDuff made his first recording as an organist with Willis Jackson in 1959. The band also included the legendary Naptown guitarist Bill Jennings. The record was titled Please, Mr. Jackson, and we'll listen to the album's title track now. Thank you. That was Willis Gator Jackson with the title cut from his 1959 album, Please, Mr. Jackson. That track featured Jack McDuff on organ and Naptown's own Bill Jennings on guitar. McDuff and Jennings worked together often over the next decade. And when McDuff released his debut album as a leader in 1960, Jennings was featured prominently on the record. We'll listen to a pair of tracks from that album now. This is Jack McDuff with Noon Train and Drowsy. That was the jazz organist Jack McDuff with Noon Train and Drowsy. Both of those tracks featured the Naptown guitar legend Bill Jennings. On this week's show, we're exploring Jack McDuff's connections to the Avenue. Bill Jennings was one of the many Indianapolis musicians who worked in McDuff's band. Up next, we'll hear from the funk music bassist, Ricky Knox. Knox was a teenager when he accepted a position in McDuff's band. He shared his memories of performing with Jack McDuff during an interview with WFYI's Kyle Long.
I was in my late teens when I got with McDuff.
Yeah. Did you, as a teenager, did you understand the significance of who he was and his history in jazz
music?
No,
I did not.
Yeah, you were just like, this guy in New York wants to hire me. I'm going to check it out.
Organ player.
Yeah.
You know, that was good with his left foot. You know, I didn't know he was a legend, man. I didn't know this guy had 37 albums out, you know.
On the greatest labels with the greatest musicians.
Yes. And we were getting ready to really go and up on the Warner Brothers. They were going to do his next album. He wasn't going to play key. He wasn't going to play organ. He was going to play Fender Rhodes. I was going to play bass on it. George Benson pulled him in on that hookup, you know. I think we were at Mardi Gras in New Orleans. And I kind of went through a mental state then, man. Because, see, McDuff taught me how to read them charts. But more and more, I started playing baritone sax parts instead of actually playing bass parts. Because that's Jack McDuff. Bass
right.
down
He's
here, bass here.
Foot pedal.
You know, foot
pedal.
And, you know, he got to make that little noise and stuff. I was playing horn parts on bass. And it actually got to me up on there where I didn't want to be there no more, man. I didn't want to do that. Because, I'm the guy that's supposed to bump you off your seat. You know, that's my job, you know.
How long in total did you stay with Jack McDuff?
Right at 5 years.
Wow,
five years. Yeah.
Wow. Touring constantly with him through that time?
It's gone all the time. Yeah. I came home probably 3-4 times.
Yeah.
You know, and then when we would take a break, I'd be in New York, you know.
And Jack McDuff, you know, he updated his sound periodically to keep with the times, but his forte was straight jazz.
That's bebop, the bebop king. That's what he, That's what he smiles. He got his smiles on with that. Yeah.
Had you played that type of music before getting into his band?
No, never.
Yeah. Was that? How did you kind of integrate yourself into his group?
Well, when I actually learned how to start swinging was with Marvin Cabell. Mm. And some of the stuff, man, was like fun. You know, it wasn't funk, but it was fun to do because I knew the instrument. I could see the notes before I got there. And that made me, you know, I could do it as fast as slow as you want to go, you know. And I'd gotten clean at it. I got good at doing what they wanted me to do, you know. But that is, I'm not really a swing player. I can play it. I can play it well. But that ain't for me, you know. So I don't know if I should be saying this. But, well, we could have called you for a job. No. Oh, man.
You must have played at a lot of interesting spots with him. I mean, were you playing the club circuit? Were you playing festivals?
Man, we did it all. We played festivals. We did the club circuit. We did Mardi Gras. My first festival I did with him, the Ann Arbor Jazz and Blues Festival. Over 60,000 people. They had delay towers going way back. And, man, it was, I think, six of us in MacDuff's band. I was a little nervous at first because I had never played in front of that many people. But, man, we clowned them, man. We had a ball. It was fun. It was fun, you know. But Ned, his main thing was, you know, big club sets. You know, he can go anywhere and work. You know, he would get deposits. He would get contracts through the mail. Wherever we was, all right, guys, we're going to be here next week, you know. I was always gone with MacDuff. That's one thing I loved about that man. That man worked real well, and he paid me an additional $200 to drive.
You were driving the van, or what? What'd you,
man, when we first started, we had a stage wagon pulling a trailer, man. I drove from Dallas, Texas, straight to Memphis, Tennessee. It's a long ride, mm-hmm. You know. Long as, man, you know I can't even drive from here to Kokomo without getting sleepy right now. Nah, that long haul thing is over with for me, man.
Did he take his own organ or did he play house organ?
No, he took everything.
Wow.
Leslie organ, Dolly's on Leslie. I mean, he would even pay me extra, because I was younger than rich some cats, man. He paid me extra to help pack it and unpack it, load in, load out. And man, I ain't had no problem with MacDuff. I liked my job.
That was the Indianapolis funk bassist Ricky Knox sharing his memories of performing with Jack MacDuff. The Naptown jazz drummer Killer Ray Appleton recorded a pair of albums with Jack MacDuff in 1967. Up next, we'll listen to a track from the album Do It Now. This is Jack MacDuff with Snapback Jack, featuring Killer Ray Appleton on drums. Echoes of Indiana Avenue will return with more music from Brother Jack MacDuff after this short break. This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. On this week's show, we're exploring Brother Jack MacDuff's connection to the Indiana Avenue music scene. Jack MacDuff is one of the most celebrated jazz organists in music history. But few music fans are aware of his deep connections to Naptown. McDuff performed regularly on the Avenue during the 1950s, appearing at venues like the Pink Poodle, George's Bar, and the PNP Club. McDuff continued performing on the Avenue into the 1990s. In 1988, he performed at the West End. And in 1990, McDuff was the headline attraction at the Madam Walker Jazz Fest. Throughout his career, McDuff featured Naptown musicians in his band. In 1972, the great Indianapolis sax player David Young recorded a pair of albums with McDuff. Up next, we'll hear two tracks from the album, Check This Out. This is Jack McDuff with Jolly Black Giant and Middle Class Folk Song. Both tracks feature David Young on sax. We just heard two songs from Jack McDuff featuring the Indianapolis jazz legend David Young on sax. On this week's show, we're looking back at McDuff's connection to Indiana Avenue. Throughout the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, Jack McDuff updated his sound, adding synthesizers and electronic piano to the band. McDuff also changed record labels often, recording for Prestige, Blue Note, Atlantic, Verve, and Cadet. By 1980, McDuff was recording fusion music for Sugar Hill Records, a label known for issuing early hip-hop records by Grandmaster Flash and the Sugar Hill Gang. McDuff's 1980 album, Kisses, featured the Indianapolis bass player Jonathan Wood. Let's listen to an excerpt. The Indianapolis vocalist Niambi Steele also recorded with McDuff at Sugar Hill Records. Niambi is best known for her work with 24 Karat Black, an influential soul music act that recorded for Stax Records. When the band broke up in the mid-1970s, Niambi relocated to New York, where she met Jack McDuff. She shared her memories of working with McDuff during an interview with WFYI's Kyle Long.
So was it around 1980 you started with Jack McDuff? And that's probably the second biggest chapter in your music career after 24 Karat Black,
yes.
Right? Brother Jack McDuff is iconic jazz organist who had a huge career that spanned many different decades and genres of music. And in 1980, he found himself as one of the few non-rap acts on Sugar Hill Records.
Yes.
You recorded with McDuff around this time performed with him. So how did you get connected with him?
I believe it was in a club. Really and truly, all these people were hanging out in Harlem. I lived in East Harlem at the time, but I would go to like the main part of Harlem, which is Lenox Avenue, 125th Street, 135th. That was the main area. And back then they had a lot of after-hour joints that looked like apartments, and when you go in, it was like a whole club and different things like that. So after I get off at the Apollo, it'd be 3 a.m. because I'd have to be at the Apollo from load in to load out. And I believe that's how I met Jack McDuff. Well, he recorded 3 albums with Sugar Hill, but I think I'm only on 2. Maybe, I can't remember. I think I'm on 2 albums of his with Sugar Hill. But it was a gas. I mean.
And did you record at the Sugar Hill Studios in New Jersey?
Yes.
What do you remember about being in the studio in those days?
I just remember that it was real. It was like a real family. Sylvia was always there. And those guys, the ones that do The Message.
Grandmaster Flash.
Yes. They were all hanging around in their leather suits. And they were sweaty, like nice-looking young men, and I was happy to be there.
I did want to ask about some of the music you recorded with Jack McDuff. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite tracks, after he left Sugar Hill, he made a record called, I think, Lift Every Voice and Sing.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, and you do an incredible, soulful version of John Coltrane's Naima on that record. What do you remember about making that record?
I just remember thinking, I am so happy that I have a husband at that time who was a trumpet player, because he played scales all the time. And you had to be able to hear that. I wasn't raised in a bebop atmosphere or even around any type of music but it was just being able to absorb the atmosphere. And the clubs we played in, sometimes I just couldn't believe I was sitting. Like when we went to California, we were in Marla Gibbs Club, and Etta James came by. I mean, stuff starts sinking in kind of organically. And to perform the music was just such an honor. To even be around to do that sort of thing, I just looked at it as almost like church. I mean, I just appreciated him letting me have the opportunity. I didn't deserve it. No, I didn't. He could have gotten anybody, but he got me. He let me, and I appreciated that. And I still, I owe a debt to the next person to expose them and help them to learn something that you can't teach. But somehow you have to learn it. And that's what I got out of all this. I learned so much. The words to explain it don't exist, because all of it came from the soul. And these people had souls that were so special and gifts that were so precious. I'm just blessed that I was able to be around them.
Let's listen to a track featuring Niambi Steele's work with Jack McDuff. From the 1983 album, Lift Every Voice and Sing, this is Naima. That's all the time we have for this week. Thanks for joining us for this look back at Jack McDuff's connection to the Avenue. Brother Jack McDuff died in January of 2001. He was 74 years old. You can meet me here on the Avenue again next week, same time, same place. And you can find the Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter.
Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. If you will stop and listen, I will tell you a thing or two.